points, it was time for the main event. Patrol leaders gathered at the starting line, where each chose a sealed envelope from a stack, holding it high in the air. The bearded warden from the night before called out, "Patrol leaders, may your path be safe." In unison, they responded, "May your aim be true." "On my mark, let the 49th annual Alpine Derby begin." All the rangers cheered, then the warden thunderclapped. It was so loud it echoed off distant mountains. Connor raced back to the patrol, ripping open the envelope as he ran. He handed the route card to Indra, who started tracing a map.
"We have rescue first, followed by Knots. They're really far apart."
Jonas shook his head. "We got a bad draw."
"Not really. Signals, identification, and fire are next, and they're all pretty close. Teamwork's on the far side, though. It puts us a long way from the finish line."
"Then we'll run to the end," said Connor. "We'll give everything we've got." Running at a steady pace, they were the first patrol to reach rescue. The station captain, a senior patrol member from another company, handed them instructions glued to a board. "An exploding aurora geyser has left everyone in your patrol temporarily blinded, except for one member who fell from a tree and broke both legs. Choose one member of your patrol to be the victim. The rest of the patrol must tend to the injuries, construct a stretcher, and transport the victim to the medical tent while blindfolded. The victim can see and provide directions." Indra squealed with delight. They had practiced almost exactly this scenario just a week earlier. Wu was the designated victim. He called out instructions while never losing his cool. Arlo helped splint Wu's left leg before switching to stretcher construction. At no point was he confused about what he needed to do next. The patrol was moving as a single, 12-handed organism. The path to the medical tent was filled with obstacles, mostly barrels and posts, but Wu carefully guided his team as they carried him on the stretcher.
"Set me down," he shouted. "We're here."
They heard a whistle, their signal to take off their blindfolds. Arlo squinted in the bright light, looking back over the course. They had finished before other patrols had even picked victims. Connor collected their route card from the captain, checking the score. 10 points, he shouted. The patrol cheered. They were off to a perfect start. On their way to Knots, they crossed paths with both the red and green patrols. Each had apparently finished their first challenge quickly, and were now headed to the next closest station.
"They got a better draw," said Jonas.
"Let's run our race, not theirs," said Connor. Knots seemed straightforward. They simply had to tie the same 10 knots they had practiced for months. The surprise was the rope itself. It was 30 feet long and 6 inches thick. Working as a team, they dragged it through the snow to form the necessary loops and hitches. Not only was it exhausting, it was hard to visualize how to tie each knot at such a giant scale. Arlo helped tie the bowline, acting the part of the rabbit as he crawled out of the hole and around the tree. Once again, they got a perfect 10 points. "Let's not get cocky," Connor warned. For signals, the instructions called for patrols to split in half, with one group hiking to a distant hilltop. Once there, they had to communicate a series of code words back and forth between locations. Arlo, Connor, and Jonas were on the hillside team, while the other three stayed at base. There was no required method of signaling. Arlo saw that most patrols were using mirrors or flashlights to do Morse code, but Jonas and Julie had been practicing flag semaphore for weeks. Originally used by ships at sea, semaphore was potentially faster. By holding flags at specific angles, the twins could send messages one letter at a time. B, L, U, E, B, E, R, R, Y, called out Jonas, reading his sister's positions. Arlo looked up blueberry in the provided chart, finding the corresponding answer, elephant. Within 2 minutes, they had gotten all of the words and were racing back down to join the others. Not only did they receive 10 points, the station captain said they were the fastest patrol yet. Indra and Connor could handle identification by themselves. They were walking encyclopedias of nature craft. The rest of the patrol simply followed them as they quickly distinguished spruces from firs, pine reading, warblers from wrens, bird sighting, and squirrel prints from chipmunk, tracking. "The tail spray is a dead giveaway," said Connor. The only debate came over a pile of droppings. Based on the color and texture, Indra was certain it was moose poop. Connor was equally convinced it was elk, given the smaller size.
"Not all moose are full-grown," Indra argued. "Little moose have little butts. Just look how much cellulose there is. That's nothing like an elk."
Connor was finally persuaded. He wrote moose on the clipboard. But when he returned from the station captain, even Arlo could identify the look on his face. Those were elk droppings. At the one station that should have been a lock for a perfect score, Blue Patrol had only gotten 9 points. "Lots of patrols are going to get that one wrong," Connor said as they left the station. "I doubt anyone gets a perfect score." But Arlo could tell Indra was upset. Even as Wu sailed through the water-boiling section of the fire challenge, she hung back from the group, silently cursing her overconfidence. When it came time for the patrol yell, she cheered with gusto. But the moment the station captain stopped watching, her smile faded. Once the fire was approved, it was time to eat. Alpine Derby rules required patrols to take a full hour for lunch, so there was no reason to rush their chicken chili. Arlo ate 2 bowls with extra cheese and crackers. Indra barely finished her first. Arlo wanted to tell her that everyone makes mistakes, that the patrol was lucky to have her, that they wouldn't even be here if not for her persistence. Indra stopped him before he could say a word.
"It's okay. I'm just processing the emotion. One day I'm going to use this experience in my memoirs."
Arlo admitted he wasn't sure what memoirs were.
"It's when a famous person writes about their life and describes the bad stuff they went through. It's important to have enough bad stuff, or it just seems like bragging, and no one likes that. So messing up today, that's really helpful, because it shows that I'm human."
Arlo wondered if trying to seem human was a sign that someone wasn't very human. But there wasn't time to discuss it further. The patrol was packing up, because in 5 minutes, they would be released to run to their final station. When they reached Teamwork, they found 3 other patrols waiting to go in. The challenge evidently took a long time, and the station had built up a backlog over the course of the day.
"We've been here 30 minutes, said a patrol leader from Canyon City. "And we still have 2 stations after this. We may just take the penalty and go out of sequence."
She was being practical. It was already after 1 o'clock, and patrols needed to cross the finish line by 5 or be disqualified.
"I told you we got a bad draw," said Jonas.
"If we'd had the station at the start, we wouldn't be waiting around."
This time, Connor didn't try to talk Jonas out of his sulk. After another 10 minutes, the Canyon City Patrol turned their sled around and left. Now there were only 2 teams ahead of Blue. To pass the time, Arlo built a snowman. Jonas and Connor paced. Julie and Indra talked with a girl in another patrol. Wu fell asleep against the sled. A second patrol decided to leave. Now there was only 1 ahead of Blue. Arlo started making a snow dog for his snowman. He quickly realized why he had never seen one before. Without legs, snow dogs just look like alligators or ottomans. The station captain waved in the next patrol, then pointed at Blue. It was their time, too. Arlo gave up on his snow dog. His gloves were wet, so he took them off. The teamwork challenge required patience and communication. Patrols were given 4 special ropes. Each had the ends fused together to form a circle with the diameter of a hula hoop. Using only these ropes, they needed to disassemble, move, and reassemble a 4-piece totem pole. Each time someone's hand touched the pole itself, it was a 1-point deduction.
"What's the most points any patrol has lost?" asked Wu.
10, said the captain. "Had a lot of patrols leave here with 0.
The trick, they quickly discovered, was to loop the ropes over each section from multiple angles,
then pull against one another to lift and move it.
Like a suspension bridge, Wu said.
Arlo thought it was more like a drawstring bag. The challenge was that everyone had to pull equally hard. Any slack and the piece would fall. But if anyone tugged too hard, the piece would flip or slip, then fall. It was tough enough to get the first piece lifted, but walking with it was nearly impossible. Arlo was trudging backwards through the snow while keeping his elbows locked tight against his chest. The rope was cutting into his hands. He regretted taking off his gloves. It took 5 minutes to move the first piece, but they managed to get it placed squarely on the platform. The second piece went faster. They were starting to get their rhythm, working together as a team. The third piece was trickier, because they needed to lift it into position. At the last moment, the twins' rope slipped. Jonas instinctively grabbed the piece as it fell. The station captain whistled. It was a 1-point deduction. After a few frustrating moments, they got the fallen totem section out of the snow and up onto the pole. Arlo's arms were shaking with fatigue. He looped the rope around his hands, trying to get a better grip for the final piece.
Slow and steady, said Connor. Better it takes 10 minutes than it slips.
As they slowly moved the last piece, Arlo's palms were sweating. He felt an odd tingle.
A cramp?
When he looked down, he found the rope wasn't coiled around his right hand anymore. But he still had a firm grasp, which was the important thing. With agonizing precision, the patrol managed to place the final piece. Arlo opened his fist to see the red imprint of the knot he had been squeezing. While they waited for their official score, Indra and Arlo put back the ropes.
Wait, is this yours?
She held up his rope circle, showing him the simple overhand knot tied in it. Arlo didn't remember the knot being there.
I guess. Why?
It's a knot.
She said it like the word was extremely important for some reason, but Arlo couldn't understand why.
Yeah, it's a knot.
No, not knot. A knot.
That wasn't making it any more clear. She spelled it out instead.
K-N-A-U-G-H-T. It's a knot you can't tie, but you did somehow.
I don't understand.
Wu came over, drinking from his water bottle. Indra enlisted his help, handing him another rope hoop.
This rope is a circle, right? There are no free ends. But to tie an overhand knot like this, you need at least one free end.
Wait, said Wu, suddenly excited. Did he tie a knot?
A slip knot, I think.
She handed Wu the rope. He handled it carefully, like it was a fragile artifact. Arlo was starting to get it. A few knots, like the sheepshank, could be tied in the middle of a rope. But most knots required looping a free end through or around something. That wasn't possible with a circle of rope.
How did you do it? Asked Wu.
I don't know, it was an accident.
Knots aren't even in the field book anymore, said Wu. They took them out because they were too dangerous.
Indra shook her head.
They took them out because no one could tie them anymore. It's not even a requirement for Bear.
Wu looked to Indra.
We should open it.
If anyone should, he should. He made it.
Wu handed Arlo the rope.
See if you can open it. Slowly.
Arlo carefully wiggled his fingers into the folds of rope. He could feel energy pulsing inside it. He looked up to find Wu and Indra had taken a step back.
It's not going to blow up, is it?
No,
said Indra with the slightest bit of a question mark.
But from everything I've read, slip knots aren't stable, so...
It's going to be fine, said Wu. Just maybe don't rush it.
But don't dawdle either. It could collapse at any point.
Arlo gently tugged at the edges of the knot. As he did, he saw lines of light rippling through the fibers. His thumb slipped inside the loop and disappeared. It was very unsettling. He could feel his thumb was still there. He could wiggle it, but he couldn't see it. It was invisible. He pulled his thumb back and it reappeared, unharmed.
Did you see that? He asked.
See what?
Asked Wu. The rope suddenly dropped open, the knot untying itself. Whatever magic had formed it had dissipated.
Guys, shouted Connor, let's go.
He had returned to the sled with their completed route card. Arlo reluctantly dropped the rope circle and hurried back with Indra and Wu.
We officially got 9 points, said Connor. The captain says only one team got 10.
Jonas perked up.
We could still beat Red. There's a chance.
As Arlo put his gloves back on, he rubbed the red spot on his palm where the knot had dug in. It was still tingling.
You okay? Asked Wu.
I'm fine, said Arlo. Let's beat Red.
26. 134 degrees. As they merged onto a bigger road, Indra stopped the sled to check the map against her compass reading.
134 degrees. It's a straight shot. The finish line is less than a mile away.
Jonas pointed to the tracks in the snow.
Only 2 or 3 sleds have been through here. We're going to be one of the first. That's extra points.
Let's get there before we worry about scores, said Connor. Wu dropped the rope.
I'll be right back.
He hurried off into the trees.
Where are you going?
Shouted Indra.
I have to pee. I'm not going to make it a mile. You go ahead.
We never split the patrol, said Connor. Just be quick. Wu disappeared behind a suitable tree. Julie dug her water bottle out of the sled.
Could we really beat Red Patrol? She asked. They were ahead of us.
They beat us in the sprint, but we don't know what they got for sled judging, said Indra. That's 10 points, too. The judges might have looked at their sled and decided they didn't really build it, whereas Mr. Henhow is clearly homemade.
Indra was the only kid Arlo had ever met who said, whereas. She sounded like a lawyer or a politician on TV. He could envision her standing at a podium, speaking in a half-yell while gesturing with her hands for emphasis. If she was running for office, Arlo would vote for her. She was stubborn and intimidating, but also dedicated in a way most people weren't. Arlo stopped paying attention as the others debated the theoretical point totals for the various patrols. He knew he had nothing to add to the conversation. He let his attention drift to the tops of the swaying pine trees, where the filtered sunlight split into rainbow colors.
Nobody move,
whispered Connor. Arlo moved. He turned to look in the direction Connor was facing. A giant bear lumbered into the road ahead of them. With each step, its massive body shifted and rolled, its head turned, looking over at them. Its ears cocked forward, curious. But it stayed low to the ground. Arlo froze. His heart pounded. The field book spent several pages outlining the various species of bear. But suddenly Arlo couldn't remember any of it. This bear's fur was dark. But was it a brown bear? Black bear? Grizzly? He felt certain it wasn't a polar bear. Unless this was a very dirty polar bear.
It's a grizzly,
whispered Connor.
We need to back away quietly. Nobody run. Thunderclap,
whispered Jonas.
Scare it off. No, that will antagonize it,
hissed Indra.
Just let it keep walking.
The bear turned to face them, sitting back on its haunches. It didn't seem interested in walking away. Connor took charge.
Don't look it in the eye. Everyone grab the rope. We'll pull the sled the other way. Once we're out of sight, we'll figure out what to do.
Everyone nodded, slowly kneeling down to pick up the tow rope. Together, they carefully spun the sled to face the opposite direction. The bear seemed interested, but unconcerned. Then,
Guys, shouted Wu, zipping his fly. Finish line's that way.
He pointed directly at the bear. Off his friend's panicked gaze, Wu followed his finger to see the massive bear rising up on its back legs. It roared.
Run!
Shouted Jonas. Arlo was pretty sure that was contrary to the directions in the field book,
which advised standing one's ground when faced with an aggressive grizzly. But his feet weren't thinking. He was running as fast as he could, the rope looped in the crook of his elbow. Wu caught up to the sled, grabbing hold of it to steer. Up ahead, the road split. "Left or right?" Arlo shouted. Half the patrol answered each choice. Not helpful. Meanwhile, the bear was charging. There was no way they could outrun it. Suddenly, a woman was standing in the middle of the road. She wore a warden's uniform, but looked too young to be a parent of a ranger. She held both hands out to her sides, concentrating. As she brought her arms to the sky, the snow on both sides of the road suddenly swirled up into a blizzard. Howling winds formed a complete whiteout, except for a tiny passage around the sled. Here, the air was calm. They were in the eye of the storm. Wu uttered a combination of bad words that expressed his surprise. Whatever special warden skill this was, they all wanted to learn it immediately. Somewhere in the swirling snow, the bear roared in response. The woman beckoned them to follow her. Quickly. "Go!" Connor shouted. She led the patrol off the road, winding through the trees. The warden was remarkably fast, running more like a deer than a person. Arlo had a hard time keeping her in sight. She was always at the next bend, pointing exactly which way they should go. Arlo looked back. He couldn't see the blizzard or the bear anymore. The woman seemed to be taking them well out of its territory. Better safe than sorry. This part of the forest was different than the rest. It felt bigger, older. They weaved between massive lichen-covered boulders and crossed streams that had frozen solid. Even the bird songs were different. A few minutes later, Arlo lost sight of the woman entirely, but he felt certain she must have headed towards the sunlit clearing ahead. The sled slowed, then stopped. Arlo looked down and realized why. There was no snow under his boots, just wet dirt and pine needles. One by one, the patrol gathered in a line at the front of the sled, staring in confused wonder. Wu pulled off his hat and gloves. He didn't need them anymore. They were standing at the mouth of a shallow river valley. The white-capped mountains in the distance were taller than anything Arlo had ever seen, ever imagined. They filled half the sky. The wind pulled curls of ice off the jagged peaks. But here, it was warm. At the center of the clearing, a massive pine tree was burning. A coil of gray smoke rose from it, gradually dispersing in the purple sky. Flakes of ash drifted in the wind. Through the flames, Arlo could see the skeleton of the tree, its glowing branches swaying in the heat of the fire. He could hear the flames crackling, whooshing. But as fast as the tree was burning, it was also regrowing. New branches slowly reached out from the trunk, eventually igniting as other limbs collapsed into orange-white cinders. It was a perfect equilibrium, a perpetual bonfire. The burning tree was putting out so much heat that all the snow in the valley had melted. Wu turned to the patrol.
"Guys, where are we?"
27. The Valley of Fire. Indra held out her compass. The patrol gathered around her to watch as the needle spun in a slow clockwise circle. North was everywhere and nowhere. They had crossed into the long woods.
"It was that woman, the warden," said Wu. "She brought us here on purpose."
Indra snapped the compass shut.
"She didn't talk. Did you guys notice that?"
"She didn't want to startle the bear," said Julie.
Of the six of them, she seemed the least alarmed, like her brain hadn't quite caught up to how bad their situation was. Connor unzipped his parka. "I'm not sure there ever was a bear. It could have all been an illusion."
"You think she's a witch?"
asked Indra. "Or something like it."
"Wait, there are witches?" asked Julie.
"Yes, but not vampires," said Arlo, "which seems weird to me." Jonas added his coat to the growing pile on the sled. "So let's say she's a witch, or like a witch. Why would she bring us here? To eat us?" Connor, Wu, and Indra looked over at Arlo. They didn't want to say it, so Arlo did.
She wanted me.
Why? Asked Julie. What's so special about you?
There wasn't time to explain about the wisps and Connor's cousin and the nightmare, so Indra just left it as...
We're not sure, but things keep trying to kill him.
And this witch is probably the one who's been sending them, added Wu.
For weeks, Arlo had been feeling guilty about getting Connor, Indra, and Wu involved. They were loyal friends who never complained, but this clearly wasn't their battle to fight. He suspected that just being near him put them in danger. He felt even worse about Julie and Jonas because they had been kept in the dark for months. They were part of the patrol, but not part of the inner circle. That felt disloyal and dishonest. And now the twins were lost in the long woods for reasons they couldn't understand. Jonas pointed into the forest.
Look, we can just retrace our steps. 5 minutes ago we were in our world. We can go back.
We can't, said Connor. Directions don't work the same in the long woods.
We don't need the compass, said Julie. The sled left a track. We'll just follow it until we're back.
Arlo shook his head. It won't work. The tracks will disappear, or go in a circle.
That's impossible.
Yes, but so is that burning tree, said Indra. So are those mountains. We're in an impossible place. It doesn't work the same as our world.
Jonas started walking back the way they came.
We can at least try. Seriously, what do we have to lose?
The minute you're out of sight, we'll never see you again, said Connor.
Trust me. I've been here before.
Indra's eyes narrowed.
Wait, here? Like here, here? This valley? With the pine tree?
I think so. Maybe. He took a step forward, surveying the meadow in front of them. It all looks familiar. Sort of the way a dream seems familiar. And it's not just the tree in the mountains. Over there, the moraine field. He pointed at a slope covered with massive boulders. It looked like a cliff had been smashed by a giant fist.
I feel like I've been there. We hid in there for a while.
Who, you and Katie?
Asked Indra. Connor nodded.
What else do you remember?
There was a house. I remember knocking on the door. It swung open, like there wasn't even a lock.
What was inside?
Connor strained to remember, but came up with nothing. Everything goes black after that. Next thing I knew, it was weeks later and I was in Canada. Katie was gone. They didn't want me. They only wanted her.
Like they only want Arlo? Asked Julie.
She was slowly coming up to speed.
If it's him they're after, maybe they'll let us go too.
As she said it, she deliberately didn't make eye contact with Arlo. Indra was offended.
You can't be serious. We're not going to give up Arlo. He's our friend and fellow ranger.
So are we, said Jonas. Yet somehow you didn't tell us anything about what was going on. We're here because of you and because of him.
We're not giving up Arlo, said Connor. We're going to figure a way out of this together as a patrol. No debate, no second guessing. Understood? Jonas and Julie reluctantly nodded. Wu had stayed out of the squabble. Now he pointed off to the distance, squinting.
Guys, there's something over there.
He dug the binoculars out of the sled, focusing as he peered through them.
It's like a little stone cabin.
He handed them to Connor. Everyone waited for his verdict. He nodded slowly.
Yeah, that looks like the house I remember.
The binoculars were passed down the line. When it was finally Arlo's turn, he found himself disagreeing with both the terms house and cabin. The building in question was a circular pile of stones held together with mud. The roof was made of sagging wood and animal skins. A broken door hung askew in its frame. This was, at best, a hut.
We need to check it out, said Wu.
Indra scoffed.
You're kidding, right? It's obviously a trap. It couldn't be more of a trap if it had cheese and a giant spring. This witch, or like a witch, is waiting for us to go in there so she can catch us just like she caught Connor and Katie when they were little.
She's right, said Arlo. We can't go.
Indra was happy to have someone else speaking common sense. But then Arlo continued.
I should go alone.
Connor dismissed that idea.
First rule of exploring, you never split the party.
Unless you're sending a scout. That's in Trailcraft.
Arlo had been reading ahead in the field book.
I'll be the scout. You guys stay here and build a ward around the sled. I don't know if it'll protect you, but it can't hurt.
He took off his parka and perched it atop the others on the sled.
Indra tried to talk reason.
Arlo, you're obviously the one she wants. If you walk in there, she's got you. Then what? We're not any better off.
Jonas agreed.
We need you as a bargaining chip.
That's not at all what I'm saying, snapped Indra.
Wu focused on his friend.
Arlo, you can't go in there. If she sees you, you're dead, or worse.
She won't see me.
Arlo untied the rope from the sled. He wasn't sure this would work, but something told him it was possible. From the moment they'd arrived in the valley, he'd felt something, a tingle on his skin, a buzz in his bones. At first, he thought it was just fear, but as the initial panic passed, the sensation only increased. The long woods had a vibration. Every tree, every leaf, every rock was humming. And he was humming along with them. He held a section of rope in his hands and began folding it back on itself, twisting and gathering the loops. Indra was the first to recognize what he was trying to do. She motioned for everyone to give him space. Unlike the bowline or two half-hitches, there didn't seem to be an exact method for tying a knot. It was more like art. You just kept working at it until you felt a change. Slowly, the rope became more supple, until he couldn't quite tell one loop from another. But his fingers never lost their place. They wove in and out, pushing and tugging. Arlo closed his eyes, feeling as the fibers came alive. They started moving without being touched, but they were still under his command. The rope was heating up. He could smell it starting to scorch. So he slowed down. Took his time. A few more twists, then the final loops melted into place. He opened his eyes. He opened his hands. There, tied in the middle of the rope, looked to be a simple overhand knot. On closer inspection, he could see tiny glimmers of light pulsing within the fibers. He had tied a slip knot. On purpose this time. Indra was amazed.
How did you do that?
I don't know. It's like the rope moves through itself.
It must be extra-dimensional, said Wu. Think about it. You can't tie a normal knot like that in three dimensions, not without having one of the ends free. But if you had four dimensions, it would be easy.
Realizing he had overstated it, he added,
Well, not easy, but possible.
Indra agreed.
Maybe that's why you can only tie knots in the Longwoods and places close to it.
Same with snaplights and thunderclaps, said Connor. You have to bend space to do them.
Snaplights and thunderclaps are useful, said Julie. She pointed at Arlo's rope.
How's that going to help anything?
Arlo wiggled his fingers into the knot, carefully pulling it open. As before, his thumbs disappeared. The space inside was shimmering like a soap bubble. He kept tugging at the edges to make the circle wider, until it was the size of a bicycle wheel. At every moment, he felt the knot trying to squeeze itself shut. Gripping the rope tight, he stepped his right foot through the opening. His leg disappeared up to his thigh, yet he was still standing in front of them.
Whoa,
said Jonas, speaking for the group. Arlo stepped his left foot into the opening. It, too, vanished, leaving him standing with only the upper half of his body visible.
I don't know how long this will last. You guys work on the ward.
What do we do if she comes? Asked Wu.
Arlo looked to Connor.
Do a thunderclap. I'll hurry back.
Wait,
said Indra.
I'm going with you.
Wu shot her a look.
You said it was a trap.
Which is why we can't let him go alone. He'll get himself killed.
She put her hands on Arlo's shoulders, ready to step in.
Besides, if there's something important in there, I'm more likely to know what it is.
Arlo had to agree on that point. He held the rope steady while Indra stepped in. It was a tight squeeze, but they both managed to fit inside. Then, with a flick, he pulled the loop over their heads. The knot suddenly contracted as the rope fell to the ground. The fibers writhed, pulsing with energy.
Arlo and Indra had vanished. 28. The Hut. They were there, but not there. To their right, Wu and Julie were gathering red stones. Back at the sled, Connor and Jonas were sorting and stacking them to build the wards. Arlo and Indra could see their lips moving, but couldn't make out what they were saying.
"Why can't we hear them?"
asked Indra. Arlo thought back to Summer's swimming at the crowded pool in Philadelphia, how loud it was at the surface, and how quiet it was below.
"I think it's like we're underwater."
Indra nodded. That's how it felt. Even the air seemed thicker, bending the light so it shimmered. Her hands sparkled as if dipped in glitter. She pointed to the rope on the ground, where the knot was glowing brightly.
"Should we take it with us, in case we need it again?"
Arlo reached down to pick it up. His fingers went right through the rope. Confused, he reached for the sled. His hand swept through the frame. The slipknot's enchantment had rendered them not just invisible, but intangible as well. They couldn't touch anything, nor be touched. Yet they weren't falling through the ground to the center of the planet, so that was a plus. Arlo thought about Cooper, stuck halfway between worlds, silently barking at things that weren't there. Maybe death was like a slipknot that never untied. The thought made him shudder. He and Indra had stepped through a hole into the land of the dead. Suddenly, this didn't seem like such a great idea. At least he wasn't alone.
"We should go," said Indra. "We don't know how long we have."
Arlo agreed. He hoped the effects would last more than a few minutes, but less than forever. Walking felt normal, except every footstep was silent. As they approached the pine tree, Arlo and Indra could see the individual needles burning. Glowing red, then white, they curled up on themselves before finally crumbling into ash. Indra tried to catch one as it fell, but it passed right through her hand. The hut was just ahead. It sat in the middle of a riverbed, where a tiny stream of melted snow spilled across rocks. Dragonflies flitted from puddle to puddle. Animal bones and carcasses were scattered among the smooth stones, garbage tossed aside after a meal. Indra pointed to the door. It was swinging slightly, like it had just been opened. But it could have also been the wind. They carefully approached. There was enough of a crack between the door and the frame that Arlo could peer inside. Indra leaned on his shoulder, straining to get a look as well. The hut was a single room with a mud floor. No windows, no real furniture, just a filthy mattress with hay poking out of it. A heavy kettle hung over the ashes of a fire. Other than the door, the only light came from a rip in the ceiling. "Definitely not a cabin," Arlo thought. Suddenly, a shape moved past. Indra gasped and tucked behind the wall. Arlo fell on his butt. The woman had been standing in the one spot in the hut they couldn't see. She slowly turned towards Arlo. For a moment, he was sure she saw him. But her eyes never focused on him. The slipknot's enchantment seemed to be working. He carefully sat up, leaning close to the door. The woman was no longer dressed as a warden. Instead, she wore a dirty blue summer dress that was tattered at the edges. Despite the state of her clothes, she was undeniably beautiful, tall and strong, like the women on magazine covers. She seemed to be lit by an inner glow. Arlo felt he could watch her for hours and never look away. She was speaking, but to whom? He was pretty sure there was no one else in the hut. Because of the enchantment, he couldn't hear what she was saying. Not that he necessarily would have been able to understand it anyway. Indra whispered, though she probably didn't need to.
"That thing in her hand, it's a speak shell. I've read about them."
The woman brought a spiral conch to her ear, as if listening to the ocean.
"They come as matched pairs. Anything you say into one gets whispered out the other, like a tin can phone without the string."
Arlo remembered making one, except with two plastic cups and dental floss.
"She's talking to somebody, maybe telling them that we're here."
"Or getting instructions about what to do next."
As if on cue, The woman put the shell to her ear again.
"What do you think she is?" asked Arlo.
"If I had to guess, I'd say she's a hag. It's like a forest witch. That's definitely not her real form."
"How do you know?"
"Look at her feet. She's barefoot, but her feet are completely clean. It's all an illusion."
Suddenly the woman, the hag, was finished with her call. She tucked the shell into a dark nook inside the wall, then headed for the door. Arlo and Indra tucked back so she wouldn't walk right through them.
"We need to follow her," said Arlo.
"Wait. She's not headed for the sled."
Indra was right. The hag was squatting over a puddle. They watched as she began pulling a net out of the water. It was much bigger than they would have imagined possible. As she tugged it up, she picked off crawdads and urchins, smashing them between rocks. Arlo's eyes narrowed.
"I think she's hungry."
"Good. We have a few minutes."
Indra stepped into the hut before he could object. Arlo decided to follow her. If the enchantment wore off, at least they'd be out of sight. The area of the hut they hadn't seen was the most interesting. A crude shelf held various herbs and ingredients. Some of the jars were clearly from the normal world, with faded supermarket labels reading thyme or rosemary. But inside were swirling beetles, spiders, or sand. Indra tried to pick one up, forgetting that her fingers couldn't grab anything. At the back of the hut, a cage hung from the roof by a rope. It was made of thin branches rather than wire, but in most ways resembled the home of a parrot or cockatiel. It was wrapped with a dirty cloth, except for the lowest few inches. Arlo leaned in to look. The bottom of the cage was littered with cracked bones. They weren't just stripped of the meat. They had been split open, the marrow sucked dry. Suddenly the cage shook. It swung on the rope, spinning. Arlo backed away as the cloth fell off the cage. The hut was now brightly lit. Two wisps floated in the cage. They rammed themselves against the wooden slats, futilely trying to get at Arlo. His panic returned, heart beating in his throat.
"They can see us! We're not invisible!"
Indra carefully approached the cage. She moved her hand along the far side. The wisps paid her no attention.
"I don't think they can really see us, but they sense you're here. It's like they've been trained to find you."
Arlo peeked out the door. The hag was still hunched over the puddle, picking through her net. For all their fury, the wisps evidently weren't making enough sound to attract her attention.
"She was the one who sent them. That night in the forest, they were looking for me specifically."
"I think so."
Indra looked around.
"We need to keep searching. There might be..."
She stopped short, unsettled. They both felt it. Something was happening. If the slipknot was like being underwater, this was like surfacing. With an audible whoosh, the enchantment came to an abrupt end. They felt themselves shoved back into the ordinary world, or at least the extraordinary world of the Longwoods. Their skin was no longer shimmering. They were visible again. A bit dizzy, Arlo carefully made his way to the door to check on the hag.
"She's still there."
"Let's keep looking. Maybe we can find something useful."
By the light of the wisps, it was clear the walls were riddled with pockets and niches. They found tin necklaces, long needles, bird skulls, and marbles. High on the wall, where he couldn't quite see, Arlo's fingers touched something soft. Cloth. He pulled it down. It was yellow, the color of supermarket mustard. Even before he unfolded it, he knew what it was. His uncle's neckerchief. He recognized the dried bloodstain. Indra took it from him. She checked the logo, confused.
"It's from Pine Mountain Company."
"It was my uncle's. He lent it to me. I had it at the first meeting, but then I couldn't find it afterwards."
It was never lost, Arlo thought. It was taken.
"But that's impossible," said Indra. "We never had a yellow patrol."
Arlo couldn't explain it.
"He said it was his."
On a hunch, Indra held the neckerchief near the cage. The wisps immediately frenzied, desperate to get it.
"They're like bloodhounds," she said. They're trained on the scent, or something like a scent. That's how they sensed you, even when they couldn't see you.
She handed him back the neckerchief. He was tucking it into his cargo pocket when, boom, a thunderclap. Arlo looked back outside. The hag was gone. 29. Tubal. The winds had shifted. Smoke from the burning tree was now drifting across the valley floor. Arlo squinted, his eyes stinging. He couldn't see the hag. He couldn't see his friends back at the boom, another thunderclap. They were in trouble. Arlo and Indra ran towards the sound. The smoke kept getting thicker, scratching their throats, burning their lungs. Indra pulled off her neckerchief, dipping it in one of the dirty puddles. She held it to her mouth, breathing through it. She gave a thumbs up. It helped. Arlo followed her example, plunging his own neckerchief into the muck. The wet fabric smelled like pond scum and gym socks. But it worked. He could breathe again. They pressed onward through the smoke. As they passed the burning tree, all they could see was a glowing orange smudge. But they were close. The edge of the woods and the patrol had to be just ahead. Suddenly, the wind shifted again, lifting the smoke up like a bedsheet. Surprised to find themselves suddenly exposed, Arlo and Indra dropped to the dirt, crawling behind a flat rock. The hag stood just 20 feet away, her back to them. The fishing net was tied around her waist like a sash. Their friends huddled behind the sled. Connor shielded Julie and Jonas, warning them. "Don't look her in the eye." Wu kept his gaze down, but held the chili pot as a weapon. Indra pointed to the stacked stones.
"The wards are working," she whispered. "She can't get any closer."
Indeed, the hag seemed to be blocked by an invisible wall. She began circling the sled, one hand feeling for cracks in the protection. As she moved, the patrol sidestepped in the opposite direction, always keeping the maximum distance from her. They were careful not to bump into the wards. Although the hag appeared to be human, there was something otherworldly about how she moved. Each step was too big, each gesture exaggerated. She seemed to still be learning how to use this body. Wu spotted Arlo and Indra. They motioned with fingers to their mouths. "Quiet." He nodded. The hag completed her circle, still no closer to getting in.
"They're safe," Arlo whispered. "Those wards won't last forever. We need to find a way to stop her."
With a sudden idea, Arlo reached into his right cargo pocket, feeling for the familiar glass container. He pulled it out. His salt shaker.
"What is that for?"
"Maybe I can dispel her like the nightmare."
"That won't work. She wasn't summoned. This is her home."
She tugged on her ear. Arlo recognized that this meant she was thinking, so he stayed quiet. Still, he wasn't ready to give up on the salt. He had been carrying it for weeks, anticipating just such an emergency. Maybe it would work as a distraction. Nobody likes having salt thrown on them. Even hags, he presumed. Indra began emptying her own pockets. Arlo hadn't realized she had been grabbing all the items she found in the hut. She held up a dirty glass jar with holes punched in its rusted lid.
"This might do it."
Inside, three iridescent bugs scuttled about.
"Fairy beetles."
Arlo took the jar, marveling at the strange insects. He now understood why Wu had been trying to catch one the day they met. They shimmered, never quite one color. The hag knelt down in front of the sled. She pressed her fingers into the dirt. But they weren't fingers anymore. They were claws. The hag was reverting to her true form. Leathery blue skin covered with scars, a tangle of black hair, two bone-white horns jutting from her forehead. The earth around the hag's hands began churning, roiling. Then the ground began to shake. Arlo had never felt an actual earthquake, but he was sure this was one. The stacked stones that formed the wards began to rattle. Connor suddenly realized the hag's plan. "Don't let them fall over." Connor, Wu, Jonas, and Julie frantically tried to keep the little towers upright, but the tremors were too strong. One by one, the stones toppled. The wards had fallen. "Run!" Connor shouted. "Run for the rocks! Hide!" He pushed them ahead. The hag slowly stood. As she craned her neck, her human form re-emerged in stages. First her hands, then her legs, finally her face. She smiled darkly. She was enjoying this. With one smooth motion, the hag pulled the net from her waist and flung it at Jonas as he ran. It tripped him. He fell hard. The net's magical fibers began creeping up his legs like a spider wrapping its prey. He screamed in panic. Wu and Connor doubled back to help him. With their pocket knives, they began sawing through the threads. With each one they cut, two more took its place. It was futile. Indra grabbed Arlo's arm.
"Throw it!"
He'd completely forgotten he was holding the fairy beetles. Standing up, Arlo took careful aim and threw the jar at the hag with all his might. He missed. The jar sailed right past her, landing in the dirt beside Wu. The hag turned, spotting Arlo. She suddenly lost interest in the others.
"Tubal,"
she said, her smile growing impossibly wide. This was her. This was the voice he had heard calling from the forest. Arlo backed away as she approached. Indra stepped in front of him as a shield, keeping her gaze low.
"I won't let you hurt him."
Arlo pushed her aside. "Just run. She only wants me." He stood his ground. With no plan other than buying his friends some time, he looked the hag directly in the eye. Suddenly, everything was okay. No, better than that. Better than it had ever been. Arlo found himself back in his almost too soft bed, watching the morning sun glisten off the faded snowflake flowers on the wallpaper. He could smell pancakes with maple syrup, but he was too lazy to get out of bed. He stretched his hand to reach the bell of his Zephyr Fireball Max. Ding. A knock. He looked over as his mom opened the door.
"Are you going to sleep all day?"
she asked with a smile. With a hand on her shoulder, Arlo's dad pushed the door open a little further. "Let him rest. We've got a big ride this afternoon. 10 miles. Arlo flicked the lever on the bell. Ding. Cooper looked up from the foot of the bed, where he always slept.
"Arlo?"
the dog asked.
"Arlo?"
Funny. Cooper had never spoken before. He'd had no idea his dog spoke with a girl's voice. Cooper seemed upset. That wasn't like him at all. With a growl, Cooper suddenly bit his hand. Arlo looked down at the wound. A drop of blood rose to the surface. He looked up to see Indra standing beside him in the valley, one of the hag's needles in her hand.
"Arlo, run!"
she shouted. He knew he should move. Hide. Indra was smart, and stubborn, and almost always right. But it was so much easier to just stay put. His parents were there, together, standing in the doorway. If he could just allow himself to believe the illusion, everything would be wonderful.
"Guys," shouted Wu, "duck!"
Arlo turned to look, just as Wu threw the glass jar. It hit the side of the hag's head, shattering. The panicked fairy beetles immediately sprayed the contents of their unctuous bladders. Upon contact with air, the clear liquid transformed into a sticky purple goo. Some got on Arlo's uniform. Some got in Indra's hair. But most of it coated the hag's face, blinding her. She roared so loudly it echoed through the valley. Arlo's trance was broken. He was back in his body, back in the valley. He started running for the rocky slope. Indra right beside him. Connor cut through the net entangling Jonas. It had stopped repairing itself. Wu helped them up. All three boys raced for the moraine field, where Julie was already scrambling up the giant rocks. Still blinded, the hag howled, thrusting her arms to the sky. As she did, the ground moved again. Twisted wooden spikes erupted from the dirt, each as long as a spear. Arlo recognized them from the pit he'd nearly fallen into when chasing the wisps.
No one had dug it. The hag had formed it magically.
"They're roots," shouted Indra. "They're the roots of the tree."
Indeed, each of the long spikes was tipped with a glowing ember. As they shot up, they crisscrossed to form crude barricades. The hag couldn't see her prey, but she could stop them from getting away. The spikes kept coming, wave after wave. The only hope was to dodge them and avoid being impaled. Arlo zigged left while Indra zagged right. They were just 10 feet apart, but separated by a dozen smoldering posts, each covered in barbs. He tripped, rolling to the side just as a new spike burst from the dirt.
"Get to the rocks," shouted Connor. "It's safe there."
He was right. The spikes were only coming out of the valley floor. The rocks were protected. Arlo eyed a path that could take him there. It was only 100 feet away, but every few steps he needed to veer left or right as new spikes shot up. With a final leap, he scrambled up onto a rock the size of his desk at school. He looked back, astonished to see how dense the field of spikes had become. Beyond them, the hag was still writhing, trying to clear the purple goo from her eyes. To his right, he saw Connor, Wu, and Jonas all safely off the valley floor. Julie was already tucking into the space between two rocks. But he couldn't find Indra anywhere.
"Arlo!"
she shouted. She was close. He finally spotted her, boxed in by a dozen spikes. She had nowhere to go. He made his way over to her, careful to stay up on the rocks.
"You can climb through over here,"
he shouted, pointing to the V formed by two crossing posts.
"I can't get up there. It's too high."
Just then, another spike shot up behind her. She was nearly skewered. Pulling her hair back, Indra steadied herself. She examined the spikes in front of her. There was simply no way through them. But she suddenly had an idea. Indra pulled her belt from her trousers and wrapped it around one of the barbed posts. Gripping the leather tight, she placed one boot up on the pole, the next one higher. Arlo watched as Indra jumped the belt up a few inches and repeated the process, slowly making her way up like a lumberjack climbing a pole. The trickiest part was the transition. She stepped her left foot into the V, praying it would hold her. Then she swung her weight over. There was nothing left to do but...
"Jump! I'll catch you!"
shouted Arlo. Abandoning her belt, Indra leaped. Arlo didn't so much catch her as provide a landing pad. Both fell back on the rocks, rattled, but unhurt.
"Keep climbing!" shouted Connor. "Spread out!"
Arlo looked up at the rocky slope above him. It was as wide as a football field, filled with nooks and pockets. That made it the perfect place to hide. And hiding seemed to be their only hope. As he wedged himself into the narrow gap beneath a boulder, Arlo was suddenly glad to be the smallest kid in Rangers. It just might keep him alive. The rocks were slick from melting snow. He could feel the cold soaking through the back of his uniform as he inched his way deeper. From this angle, he could only see the top of the ever-burning pine tree as it sent a coil of smoke rising into the purple sky. He could only hear the blood rushing in his ears. Maybe they had gotten away. Maybe the hag was searching the forest, rather than the rocky slope. Maybe...
"Tubal! Tubal!"
Her voice was like a rusty hinge. It was the same way you would call a dog to dinner. Except Arlo was the meal. Exhaling, Arlo squeezed further into the crevice. A small orange lizard suddenly darted out, annoyed by this intruder. Each of the creature's three eyes blinked in succession, studying the boy. Arlo made a mental note to look up the lizard when he got home. If he got home. To his right, he heard claws on the rocks. The hag was close. Arlo's perfect hiding spot now seemed far less ideal. He had left himself no escape path. Either she would find him or she wouldn't. And there was nothing he could do. A woman's bare foot stepped into view, the tattered edge of her filthy dress draping across her calf. Her skin was clean and smooth as marble. At the edge of the rocks, the three-eyed lizard stared up, transfixed,
until a clawed hand suddenly snatched it up. Arlo listened as the hag crunched through the lizard's bones, finishing it with a slurp.